Hi, my name is Erin Tillman. I am a dating empowerment coach, speaker, and author known as the Dating Advice Girl. For over 10 years, I've been empowering and coaching singles by helping them improve their social skills, communication skills, and get clear on their dating goals and objectives. Relationships are not one size fits all, but basic consent and respect are important parts of the dating process in order to have an exciting and meaningful connection with others. Listen, learn, and laugh with me on this journey of sex-positive self-discovery. Thanks for listening. So in the book, I wanted to make it so that it wasn't too explicit. Like I didn't want it to only focus on sex or dating. You know, there's everything from boundaries with friends and family, knowing your own boundaries. There is a chapter on sexuality and the new normal being enthusiastic consent. So if somebody isn't enthusiastic about what's happening, then that's a no. And that's the new normal. Whereas back in the day when I was growing up, I feel like it was like no means no. That was the mantra, so to speak. And now it's like, no, if someone's got to be enthusiastic about it. And there's so many stories. And whatever it is. Like, I mean, in LA, as you probably can imagine, perhaps, all of you, that it's extremely liberal. And it's very, like, respect someone's space and, like, you know, like, maybe, and, you know, so a big thing in circles I run in and when I speak there is don't assume someone wants to hug. So it's like, can I hug you? Even to that basic level of hugging, like ask before. And then there's the whole thing, like there's a pendulum that swings in all of these cases. So then there's a little bit of a backlash with that. Like, I don't want to have to ask dog somebody like it should, but I mean, but again, the basis for all of this is just, you know, don't make assumptions, right?
Yep.
And respect people. And, you know, Molly Ray, our health teacher, and your cousin, ironically, that I kind of knew, but didn't know. You know, she, in her quote and maybe in her interview that I did with her, she was talking about how it's really important to, like, reinforce this stuff with kids. You know, because as kids, I mean, if we all think back, like, with certain family members and stuff, like, I have family members that weren't, like, inappropriate, but just were so, like, just, like, come here, like, rah, you know, and it's like, oh, my God, like, maybe I don't want an extended, like, 10-minute hug, uncle, whatever, you know, or whatever. But it's just, like, that's what you do because that's family, and family shouldn't have boundaries for some reason or something, right? It's, like, weird, mm-hmm. You know? So, anyway, going back. So, back to this collaboration. Oh, my God, are we, like, out of time? I don't even know what's happening. No, but because we both have the gift of gab. So when I reached out to you, and I can't remember how that happened, but I was like, hey, Seth, I'm writing this book. Call.
You just said, hey, I'm writing this book. Would you do some illustration?
Oh, wait, by the way, going back, had you done any sort of illustrating before?
No, and this is why. I'm horrible at drawing the same thing twice. So
interesting.
And illustration always requires that you have a character.
Yeah.
And that you draw them over and over again from different directions. Up, I'm horrible at that. My brother, awesome at that.
Oh,
I have never been able to do that for
someone.
Stick figures was perfect for me.
Okay, good, because I was like, I just want, like, making it seem like this will be easy for you, Seth, which is so presumptuous of me, but I was like, I just want stick figures. I know I want it to be, like, genderless stick figure type people.
And me being me, I made it more complicated than it needed to be. In the first one, I started doing sketches. I was trying for these, like, weird, anonymous, humanoid-looking figures, and they were just creepy aliens, is all they were. It made everything I tried to do really creepy.
Oh, my God. I love
so
it.
Like,
no, I'm like,
weird,
the base,
Stanley
just make
Kubrick
it real
thing.
Basic, just as basic
so,
as possible.
Yeah, it had to be stick, like, real stick figures.
Yes.
And I'll tell you why ended up working so well. So I did make, you know, semi-realistic backgrounds, like actual, like, shaded representational
space. What were you using
sort of
to do these?
Oh, I was doing it on my iPad on a program called Procreate, which is a great app for iPads. It's only like $4.99, but it's like it's great to illustrate on. I have an Apple Pencil too, which made it super easy. And it's great specifically doing stick figures with having to capture all these varying expressions and
mm-hmm.
moods and emotions on stick figures. With stick figures, it's basically like three lines
right.
that have to capture a specific emotion, which is difficult to do. If you were doing that on paper, you'd have to be using tracing layers and like really like doing a million of them over and over again. On the iPad, I can do a mouth, Nope, that's not right. Click undo. It's gone.
Oh, so do it again. Great. Technology.
Click undo. It's gone. And I might have to do it over and over again, but it was super easy because of the app I was using.
But I appreciate this very much because I feel like I'm not an artist at all. not a visual artist in any way. And so for me, in my mind, I'm like, I know I can't draw, but Seth's the amazing artist. This is probably really easy for him. So this is the first time I'm hearing him say that I did it over and over again, and it was kind of stressful because I'm like, I had no idea. And why should I make that assumption, right? You know, just because it looks simpler than some other things you've done, it isn't necessarily, you know?
I mean, it still took a little bit of effort.
Yeah.
It's definitely not the most complicated thing I've ever done, but it still takes effort and some planning.
Okay, let me go back. So why did you want to be a part of this book, or what? Besides knowing me. Yes, we're not super close friends. Like, we're ex-classmates. We have respect for each other. Well, I'll speak for myself. I have a lot of respect for you. And I like, you know, and we've known each other a long time. But why did you want to be a part of this? When I told, because I was like, I'm going to ask Seth if he wants to do this. I'm fully aware that he might not want to be associated with something that could be considered controversial in some way, right? Like consent, boundaries, whatever. He's a guy. I don't know how he's going to feel about this. So why did you want to be a part of it?
Partially because of all the stuff you just said. Except that respect thing. No, I'm just kidding.
Minus that, right?
It could be construed as controversial, but it shouldn't be.
Right.
And so I like that it's that you were – the way you had described it was a sort of more casual conversational approach to the topic, which I think needs to be
– Totally.
Had that conversation needs to be had. So I wanted to be a part of it because of that. Even just like through my own experiences, like this is not – like you were saying earlier – this is not stuff that older folks grew up with
at all. And right.
There was never any conversation
at all
in my household about much of anything.
Yeah.
I have great parents, love them to death, but this is not stuff we talked about.
Totally.
Right. So, I think it should be out there and able to be talked about. And you had mentioned like stick figure illustrations. I thought that needs to happen to make it like kind of, it makes it simple and sort of fun. And not intimidating in the least.
Right.
It's sort of almost like you see stick figure illustrations, simple illustrations like that in almost like how-to books.
Yeah.
And like instructional books and things like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a great sort of visual relationship to those sorts of things, because nobody's afraid of those.
Totally.
So, I like the description of the project. I thought it was a good mission that you were on. It sounded like a kind of a fun thing to work on.
Yay. And so, basically what I ended up doing was I sent Seth, like, short phrases of, I want to have, for example, like, two people kissing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, go for it. Two people kissing, go for it. Or, like, a lot of it was, you know, like, a stick figure with, like, a thought bubble. A lot of thought bubbles. I like the thought bubbles. People at a bar talking about stuff, you know? So, were my descriptions helpful? It was pretty
absolutely,
easy to go off of.
I would have had no idea what to do if you had not given me the descriptions.
Yes.
Nice. Can I tell you why?
Yes.
I think another reason why I think they work. Like,
tell me.
I didn't know.
Oh, can we show them like some?
I can tell you why I think they work. I'll show you the one that's all about cosplay.
Yes, because there's a section on cosplay and consent in the book, which is
that's
why I'm here.
Cosplay. You can actually watch a playback of it, of me drawing.
Oh my God, yeah, yes. I know, you sent me an animated thing like that. It was so fascinating.
I hit the wrong button. One reason why I think that they work so well as stick figures. One, they're genderless, completely genderless.
Right.
Two, they don't have any clothes on.
Yes.
They're these weird stick figures are these weird vulnerable creatures.
Yeah.
As they are.
Oh my God, I never thought about that.
Realize this until I was like almost done doing this, but they're almost vulnerable as they are. And the reason why I wanted to show the one with the cosplay, it's because all of a sudden I had to put costumes on characters that had never had clothes on them the entire book.
Right.
And I had to figure out, okay, how am I going to create costumes that don't involve pants or shirts right. or shoes. So there's a Viking helmet and a sword and a shield, and there's a cape and a mask.
Which was great.
And this is why I think that one also works so well, speaking to the topic of consent. Because what I'm going to briefly describe what's happening in the scene that I drew. There's a superhero character
yeah.
who's talking to the Viking.
Right.
And the superhero character has a cape on and a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And behind that character is someone in a pirate costume, has a pirate's hat that they've taken off, kind of drooped down to the floor. And they've got an eye patch on. And they're picking up the cape
right.
of the superhero,
mm-hmm.
looking underneath it.
Right.
Which is obviously sort of a nefarious act.
Nefarious, yes.
The funny thing is to me is mm-hmm. that there are no clothes on that person still,
right.
on that stick figure. So everything they're looking at is completely visible from the front.
Right.
Right? So this gets
deep.
At those,
this is way deeper.
It is. It is. This is the stuff I thought about while I was drawing stick people. So so it gets to the point of like right to the crux of consent and giving consent. The front they did not care about. They were choosing to expose their front to the people they were exposing it to. And then there was this creeper behind them that they did not give permission
right.
to lift the cape.
Right.
And even though it's exposed in the, front,
the front,
they
yeah.
did not give permission. There was an assumption
yeah.
made by
yeah.
the pirate.
Right.
There's also a little guy in the background with a magic wand scaring a guy at a booth. And I thought that was funny, too.
I don't even think I noticed that. Wait a second. I love it.
It's in there. I thought that the stick figures worked really well because of all those things.
I love it. No, yeah. That's so great. The layers, Seth. The layers.
I thought about it.
I know you did. It's great.
Sitting there drawing stick figures, not thinking about it.
No, but you know what? But to be fair, not being an artist, you know, I feel like everything you've worked on most likely had some like layers of depth there, but you know, the average person who isn't an artist wouldn't think about, you know.
I moved to an artist colony, which was actually an old motel. It's not even like a town; it's an old motel along a two-lane highway in just outside of Apache Junction, Arizona.
Wow.
Which is about 45 minutes east of Phoenix.
Oh my God.
And I lived in a little cinder block room with plywood floors, with no heat or air conditioning.
So like an artist commune?
Kinda, yeah. It was
wow.
It's nothing but weirdos. And no, for real. There's an art supply store. Man, I could go on and on about that.
I love
place.
It.
It was built in the 30s by a really crappy German painter. And the guy I studied with and his wife, Joel and Joanne, they're both painters that studied at the Art Students League in New York City for like 6 or 7 years each under a Dutch master painter, a Dutch master style painter, who was amazing. And they're amazing. And Joel agreed to teach me some painting technique if I moved out there. So
how did you meet him?
It was totally a fluke. a cousin of mine who lived out there, who's like 10 years older than me, who I never saw, except for like rare occasions when she came to Ohio at Christmas. She showed up one year, it must have been 2005, for Christmas, maybe 2004. And all of a sudden I was older,
mm-hmm.
and that like maturity gap had closed, and so I wasn't at the kids' table anymore.
Totally.
And she started talking to me, and which kind of makes her sound like a jerk, like she was ignoring the kids or something. But she's fine. She knew I was an artist. She's a creative lady herself. She, at the time, was married to a gentleman whose mother and father, so her mother and father-in-law were art collectors and critics. Her mother-in-law was a critic in Phoenix,
oh, wow.
Arizona. And she was just asking me like what type of stuff I was working on, and it was Christmas, so I was like, well, I'm not gonna get my stuff out. Just email me some stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So she, unbeknownst to me, took that stuff, and it was just random stuff that I had photos of.
Like random painting, drawing,
like whatever I had photographs of.
Okay.
I mean, so it was really random stuff. Because like I said, I'm not good at self-promotion, so I don't take photographs of anything like I should.
I know, I was like, what's your website? So I can put it on my book website. I don't really
update it.
I'm like, ugh.
I mean, there's stuff there, but I don't really update it very much. So it was really random stuff, and unbeknownst to me, she took it to a lady that ran a gallery in Scottsdale, mm-hmm. like a really upscale gallery, like yeah. across from the Cartier shop.
My God.
And she was just like showing her my stuff, asking if I was cut out for gallery work. And she said, yeah, he's got plenty of talent. Most people that do sell art as for a living, they actually have like a teaching gig that provides them steady income that right. they can count on.
Right.
And maybe even health insurance if they're lucky.
Oh my God.
And my cousin was like, yeah, he's never going back to school. And at the time, she was absolutely right. I had no degrees. I hated school.
Yeah.
Even in high school, I hated school.
Yeah.
Other than that's where my friends were. She's then the lady recommended that I study with somebody.
Yeah.
She recommended Joel out of this crazy place called East Side Art.
And she's randomly knew him.
No longer exists now. Yeah. She knew him, and so my cousin contacted him. And because of her father-in-law already knew him too. So mm-hmm. She contacted him, and he was like, well, I don't really take students on like that. And she talked him into it, showed him my stuff, and he said, well, okay, yeah, I got a guy who lives out there now who's not really using his studio, so I'll see if he's ready to move out, and if he's ready to move out, he can have that place.
Wait, so you're by yourself out
I'm
there?
By myself.
What?
Yeah, and
Hold on. Sorry, I know this is like totally deviating from the point of this whatever, but I'm fascinated. I love this. So then your cousin tells you there's this like there's this commune there, artist commune. She's like, would you want to go? And your first thought
it's weirder than that. She called me on the phone and she said, I showed your stuff to the lady at the gallery. I showed your stuff to this guy, Joel. He said he'd take you on as a student, but he wants to know in 2 weeks, and he wants a year-long commitment.
Oh my God!
And $1,000 deposit.
What? And you're like, where is this?
I don't know this guy, Joel.
Wow. You could have been like fully murdered.
And I was dating. I like seriously dating Andrea, who's I'm
his
married
wife
to now.
Yes.
But I was seriously dating her at this time. And so then it was just like, I might be moving to a place in Arizona for a year. is that cool? And we talked about it a lot, I ended up moving out there. And
and just shout out to Andrea, because honestly most women would be like, this is the end.
She puts up a lot with a lot of crap for me.
That's amazing.
So I moved out there, and I like picked up I didn't practice as much as I should have, but I picked up a lot of painting technique from Joel and Joanne. And
so they were basically teaching you.
Yeah, and they run an art supply. And this is how crazy the place was. They run an art supply store up in the front, and they live in like a little like studio apartment in the back. Mm-hmm. And then there's a gallery over here where they show work.
Yeah.
And then Joel's studio's over here, all attached in this little U-shaped building.
Yeah.
And I moved in. I'd only met them once. For like an evening at an art show, at one of Joel's art shows at another gallery in Scottsdale.
Oh my God.
And I moved in, and on week two, they left for Mazatlan, Mexico for a 2 week vacation and left me in charge of their art supply store.
Okay, artists, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, in the first week, like day three, I was sitting out doing an etching, which I'd never done before, and he just like threw me into etching, and I was sitting out on the driveway and like seven sheriff cars go by.
What?
Because there, and it turns out there was like a lady that was reported missing back across from my place in one of the other apartments, but she was a published children's book author who was also bipolar and had gone off her meds and
what
was just out.
World? Will you please write that book?
I know. There's a frame shop run by a meth head named Chuck, who was a twice convicted unarmed bank robber.
What?
It was,
okay, no, you gotta write this down. P.S. I'm so glad I'm recording
insane.
This
total,
this is the best story
it's a total
ever.
Tangent.
I love it.
But it was a year of my life.
Wow.
Yeah, so I studied out there. I picked up a ton of painting know-how from them, actually. Because it turns out you go to college and you expect to learn how to paint.
Mm.
But they really just talk about observation and stuff more so than the technique of actually applying paint.
Yeah.
So, and that was really frustrating to me, so that's why I ended up, like, really committing to going out to Arizona. So I came back, I moved back from there in, we might as well just start there. And
Yeah, totally.
I moved back from there in 2007 in February, got engaged in May of 2007, got married in October of 2007, because my wife's an event planner, so she was like, why wait?
Let's do this now.
She is the organizer.
You're back from a year away.
I'm the weird, unorganized person. She is the organized person, and that's the only reason anything gets done. And she ended up getting a job at the University of Dayton.
Which is where she went to college. Ironically.
And another aside.
Yes.
Did you know the health teacher, our health teacher is my cousin? Just so you
okay,
know.
Yes, I randomly do. Oh, my God.
Since my wife got a...
That's Molly Ray, by the way. Yeah, She's in Ray. The book. She contributed a quote in the book for the consent guidebook. Yes.
It's small town stuff. And then, so since my wife ended up working at the University of Dayton, it ended up being very close to free for me to go back to school.
Right.
Which the cost of school was my last excuse not to go. And so then that went away. And so I had to go back to school. So I got my bachelor's degree in, let's see, it was 2015.
And what was the major?
Fine arts.
Mm-hmm.
Still concentrating in drawing and painting. Little detail about that, my first son Noah was born 2 years before I graduated. So I was doing school and working and had a kid at home.
Oh my gosh.
And then, so he was 2 years old in the stands at graduation. And then I was teaching art at a retirement community at the time.
Wow.
And I quit my job. As, you know, as responsible people do, I graduated with my son being two. My second son was born in May of 2015. Then I quit my job in July of 2015, and I started grad school in August of 2015.
Was it Andrea freaking out?
She's the one that told me to do it.
That's a good wife.
Yeah.
Good job, you guys.
I was on the fence about all this crap.
Wow,
and she's
see?
Like, hey... We're going to do this.
Oh, no, but it's so beautiful.
And she was like, you're going full time. You're just getting it done. No dragging this out.
Right.
Just doing it. So
I love it.
Yeah, she made me commit. And so I did it. I graduated with my master's in 2017. Went straight to teaching right out of the gate.
What are you teaching?
I actually teach art, digital photography, and coincidentally health because they needed somebody to teach health.
What?
I know. It's totally out of my realm of expertise, but... it's high school health. The funny thing is, I teach at a conservative Catholic high school part-time, where I can't really talk about anything in this book.
Right. No, totally.
It's a conservative...
I have a question about that. Do they actually say, here are the guidelines for what you can teach in this health class?
The Archdiocese of that region, yes, they determine what you can cover and what you can't cover.
The Archdiocese determines.
Yeah. So
I know because I don't really know. I go when I speak at colleges, especially, it's usually like very liberal colleges, liberal in the sense that they're just, you know, like we want the kids to have all the information they can about this stuff. So I don't know much about it.
Really bizarre to me because then I teach at the University of Dayton as well part time.
Right.
Coincidentally, another Catholic school. I'm not even Catholic, so this is just really coincidental.
Yeah, yeah.
And the high school I got because it's across the street from my house. So
small town stuff.
They had an opening. And it was right across the street. So So it's funny because college, you can talk about whatever you want, even at this Catholic school that we went to.
Right. Right.
But then the high school, I have to really watch what I say, and I have to be guarded. And I'm a pretty open, liberal thinker.
Do the kids ever ask you, like, questions in the health class that you struggle answering?
That I struggle answering? Not really. I think they've been brought up in that system enough to know what not to ask and what the education, as you could imagine, as you probably assume, is abstinence-only education.
Right.
But so I, you know, because that's my job and what's I'm hired to do.
Yeah.
That's just sort of what I do.
This is very interesting.
If they had a question that I could answer, I would probably... Nobody's done it yet.
Yeah.
I would probably just ask to see them after class and have a discussion.
Sure.
And I could even tell them then, at least on a one-on-one basis, what I could tell them and what I couldn't tell them and why I couldn't tell
Absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely, yeah.
At least so that they knew that I was purposefully withholding back information just because of the job description.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, there's the thing called the internet. So, so it's like, you know.
High school students.
They're
probably hip to a lot of this stuff anyways.
Yeah.
So.
For sure. But it is, that's very interesting. I'm glad you shared that though.
But we do cover like relationship stuff and talk about domestic violence and things like that.
Okay.
That's sort of, I mean, they don't really hit the stuff that you do in your book, but it's definitely about personal space and respect and that sort of thing. So we hit some of that stuff, just how to be a decent human.
I think a lot of us, even if you haven't been on a college, at a college party, a lot of us have been to parties, like, that a lot of stuff was happening, and not necessarily bad stuff, but it's the perfect storm of like events at a situation where anything could happen. And so if people aren't really like paying attention to each other,
respecting. It is a hotbed of activity, so to speak.
Right. Then anything can go down and things go, you know. So, yeah, I definitely wanted to have some sort of party scenario in the book as well.
Well, and that one specifically also linked to intoxication. Consent.
Right, exactly. Right. And because, I mean, you know, and that's, you know, I'm not a clinical psychologist. I'm not a PhD, whatever. And so I've gotten that question a lot. Like, well, then, you know, maybe I do want to have drinks if I'm out with somebody. Like, so then how many drinks is enough to not be able to give consent is the question I get asked a lot. And I'm like, well, you know, the real answer I would give is that really, I mean, none. But that's not realistic, right? That's not realistic. Like, you know, I'm currently single and dating, and it's like, well, if I'm out, I like to have a cocktail. And if I end up kissing someone I'm with, I mean, cool. And so, I mean, it's just, it's kind of, what's the phrase with risk in it? I don't know. It's like, we're all taking risks, but if it's a good risk if you're on the same page and there's communication. And again, if you're paying attention to the person that you're with, but also the other part of that is knowing your own boundaries.
Just, I think, being that's self-aware,
a huge self-awareness, you know, and yeah. So, I don't know. But that is a new, very nuanced. I really struggled with that chapter in the book. Actually, I like that chapter made me almost not write the book. Because I'm like, this is a huge part of this whole conversation is drinking and intoxication around it. And it's terrifying because I don't know. And I'm not a licensed, you know, I'm a media personality who's focused on dating and relationships for 10 years. So I have some expertise, you know, and I collaborate with psychologists and people, but I don't, oh my God, it's terrifying. It's like, oh my God. Who am I to say all this stuff, you know? It should be that person writing the book about it, whatever. But mm-hmm. I was like, someone's got to do it. This is
basic
insane.
Human nature that you can take and go stuff with it.
Yeah.
I'm a comm major, so I do some stuff about this.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Like, what kind of stuff? If you don't mind me asking.
It was probably the best year for me to take a comm course because it was the whole Trump thing.
Yeah. Yes.
So you got to hear a lot of things. And my campus is very conservative.
Where do you go?
Kent Tusk.
Okay.
The teachers are more liberal than the students. Yeah, which is funny because it's usually like the opposite.
It
depends on where you are.
Yeah, but...
I would think the younger generation in general would be a little more open. So that is interesting.
It goes back and forth.
Places like that, it's usually closed in.
Yeah.
Plus you're going to a college. Or I go there because it's cheap.
Yeah.
I'm still going to be spending a lot of money, but it's like...
Totally.
It's like $20,000 for like one semester.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the fact that that's cheap, right? It's crazy. Anyway, go on, please.
But yeah, it's just stuff like that, or because I've done some papers, like especially on online dating, where I said if you're like introverted, like that, don't do online dating. Talk.
Yeah.
Like, or if you're, I had to be because this is come from my experience. You're just ugly. Don't do online dating. Learn how to speak to people.
P.S. You're not ugly, but it's a visual medium, right?
Yeah, and I say in the thing, it's like if you just go up to someone, get used to asking people out. That's your whole thing.
Totally.
And it's not.
I love it.
That's
so great. Sorry, I get really excited.
It's just like get used to it, and it's like rejection. It's like whatever.
Right.
You learn from it. Your whole goal is just like to learn how to get to that date part.
Yeah.
And not to get to a girlfriend. Because
totally.
I mean, now, a lot of guys, and since we're in a more internet age,
mm-hmm.
where we care less about that stuff anymore. So
can you clarify that? We care less about what stuff?
Well, like, it's just like engaging with women and.
Yeah.
And women with men. Like, we just. You don't see as much anymore because there's a bunch of single people on my campus.
Well, yeah.
Half the time on my campus, everyone's married because that's such a...
Because you have such a conservative campus, yeah.
Where girls are having their third kid on their third semester.
Yeah, that is a very conservative campus.
Right.
where, like, that could be an issue too, which is why some people go off on Monday. And, like, I still do it, but it's just half the time. Everyone's weird on there.
It can be weird. I'm on, like, a lot of the apps, and I live in Los Angeles, and it is crazy. Like, so for me, for example, everything you said is so straight on, though, right on. When I do workshops, especially to adults, I say a lot of things you said. I think a lot of people are fixated on the end goal of finding a husband or finding a wife, and they're not even enjoying the dating process, when it really is just getting to know someone new. Like, expanding your social circles, hopefully doing something fun with somebody. Hello, it should be fun. Instead
of just conducting
interviews. Right, right. Like, I mean, especially in, I mean, wherever you are, it's like, there's so many fun things you could do with somebody, right? And it's like, a lot of people I know, single people I know, won't even have fun because they're like, oh, well, this wasn't the one. And I'm like, oh my God, but this is the first time you met this person. Like, just get to know them and do something fun.
Plus experience. Like,
exactly.
Experience, like drawing.
Yes.
Dating's a whole idea about experience. I just like the idea of just engaging with friends now. Yeah. I'll save that. But
don't give up. Like, don't give up. Like, it's hard. Listen, it's nuts for everybody. You'd be shocked. Like, in Los Angeles, like, I know.
It's just not a priority for me right now.
Right, which is a good way to be, though. But then, you know, you're still open, potentially. Exactly. Exactly. But, yeah, I mean, I love this conversation a lot.
I know a lot of guys here. It's most common in men,
mm-hmm.
where they'll just get a girlfriend to get a girlfriend.
Oh, women, too. It's nuts.
Oh, yeah, I see it more. Cause,
because you see more guys doing that.
Yeah.
Really? I'm shocked.
Because it's... Like, if you look on dating websites, it's much easier for... Where women got to deal with more of the shit.
Right. Right.
At least, like, you know, men, it's like... That's what I just said. It's just, like, it's just too much competition where you're better off just meeting someone in person.
I think it's a regional thing, though, because I think most women, at least in California or L.A., would rather just have a relationship, and guys are like, nope, I'm gonna be single. I can, like, have sex whoever I want. I have my freedom, whatever. It's like the opposite, weirdly.
It has to be the culture around you where it's,
I guess, so
you want to get married and start up that good old farm. I came from Atlanta where I'm just like, I don't know, maybe when I'm 30 I'll finally get married, but I just want, like, it's like, hey, if I need to get a girlfriend during college, I'm okay with that. But yeah, like, people just think that they can't go places to meet them, and I think a lot of that now, like, men are very afraid because stuff like the Me Too movement.
Totally.
And it's like, dude, just don't be creepy. Just, as long as you sit down. It's awkward. It's definitely awkward. Because I remember once, if you're going to ask a girl at a coffee shop, make sure you're just going to leave afterwards.
Don't do it right when you get your coffee. And
no, yeah, and then you're...
That's actually pretty... That's smart, though.
Your human instinct is just to stare at that person then. It's like, oh, I can't believe I did
that. Of course, of course.
And then that comes off as kind of creepy. It's like, oh, God, this guy, like, stared at me.
Can I ask you a question about that, though? So I'm doing a talk tomorrow, I think, around, like, dating and the Me Too movement and stuff. And so for you, you said that you just want to, like, hang out with friends and you're open if something happens. But is, like, the Me Too movement and that kind of thing been one of the reasons why you're not, like, pursuing it?
I think my favorite, he's an actor. It's, like, the only people that should be afraid of it is, like, people that got something to hide.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. Yes.
Which, like, and there can just be, but there's also a lot of awkward, shy guys.
Absolutely.
Shy on men is usually bad, where shy on women is usually good, because it's like, okay, because most men are like, okay, she's not going to be talking to too many guys. Stuff like that, which I don't mind both.
Yeah.
Like, I do prefer shy because it's easier to talk to, because shy usually means they're into nerdy stuff. But
Are
you shy and into nerdy stuff?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, so you're just looking for somebody to connect with, that's all.
Who's similar, which is great. By the way, 10 years as a dating coach, and I've been on some really bad dates, too. Yeah. I mean, it's just part, like you said something really great earlier, it's part of the process. Right. It's part of the process. Not everybody likes everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Some people that you would consider the most beautiful, the most successful, have bad dates, too. or struggle with dating. It's not, it's a very specific thing. It's a human experience, this crazy thing dating that we do.
And I like that you covered that in the book, that you said, like, learn how to take a no.
Yes.
And don't take it personally.
Right.
And don't take it personally.
Book too. Right. It was, it's really important because people do take, I was walking around with a friend in Santa Monica last weekend, and this guy came up to me and my friend, female friend, and he was like, hey, like, you guys, you're cute, whatever. Like, do you guys want to, like, hang out? And I said, or can I get your number? And I said, I don't give my phone number out, which I actually don't. Like, I'll do, a lot of people now do, like, Instagram. Discord. Like, find me on Instagram or find me on, what?
I do Discord.
Yeah.
Just like, there I can easily get rid of you if I don't like you.
No, exactly. So, yeah, but that's, the new thing is, like, not giving someone your number. Mm-hmm. And so this guy, he got so angry at me. He got really angry with me. And we're like it literally in the street talking. He's like, see, this is what women do. And then women complain that blah, blah, blah. He went on this whole thing. And his guy friend, he was like, listen, you don't know why she's not giving you her number. Like, calm down. It's not that serious. And he was going off on a rant and just, like, was ranting as he walked away. And I'm like, see, this is insane. And back on dating apps, too. I don't give my number out on dating apps. Because a dating app, it's literally like you have it on your phone. You can message someone in the app on your phone like a text or, like, you know. But I just don't need all the world having my phone number. I just don't. And if someone doesn't respect that boundary up front, it's probably not going to go well later.
I hate all the ringtones on my phone.
Yeah.
And I hate being alerted. I just check Discord 5 minutes. Like, okay, I got a message, and then I'll type
it. Right. But, I mean, regardless, like, the bottom line is whatever makes someone feel comfortable, no one should be arguing about that.